Hello there, everyone. Welcome along to The Sweet Spot. It's the Racing Post's weekly golf show with Bruce Millington. And this week, standing in for the holidaying Steve Palmer, we've got James Mason, one of the Racing Post's golf experts. A couple of tournaments to look back on, three to preview. Really good ones, the FedEx playoff start. We've got the Women's Open and we've got another LIV. Before we look into them, let's look back on what happened last week. And star of the week, no doubt, James, Bryson DeChambeau with a 58 to romp to victory in LIV Greenbrier. Very impressive stuff from Bryson, who's undergone another transformation this year. We've got slimline Bryson this year, haven't we? Does that performance and others this year earn him a ticket to Italy for the Ryder Cup, do you think?
I don't think it will earn him a ticket to the Ryder Cup, because I don't think Zach Johnson, unless they qualify automatically in the six top spots, I don't think Zach Johnson will take LIV players as captain's picks. And there's not many picks left to go for either, because Fred Couples, I think it was, one of the vice captains, has pretty much came out a couple of weeks ago and named three players that were going to be in Italy that are currently outside of the top six. Jordan Spieth was one of them. I think Max Homa was another one. So there's not many picks to go for. And I just don't think Johnson will want too many LIV players on there, in terms of, you've got Brooks Koepka up there in terms of the top six, but adding more players in when there's still a little bit of animosity, I would think, between the two tours, I don't think he'd be having him. But take nothing away from DeChambeau, a 58, you know, very few people have done that. The fourth player in an elite professional event that shot 58. There was two on the Japan tour. Do you remember the other 58 on the PGA tour?
No. I thought, having a week off from Steve Palmer, I thought the one thing is I won't be asked if I remember things that happened in the world of golf.
And he's got a horrible swing. He's got a horrible swing.
Blimey. Not what's his face. Jim Furyk would be one.
Jim Furyk, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, 58. That was at TPC River Highlands in 2016. So he's the other one on the PGA Tour.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, credit to DeChambeau. It was a brilliant round for him. He birdied 22 of his last 34 holes. So that's hard to ignore from Zach Johnson's perspective. But I just think from what he said in recent weeks and months, he's not going to want to have them as his picks.
Okie dokie. On the US tour, we had the Wyndham Championship. And it was an exciting finish, agonising finish. If you followed Steve in on Russell Henley, who came back from the resumption, they had a weather delay with four holes left, birdied, and then went bogey, bogey, bogey. And just a quick rant, James, if I can get this off my chest, very much talking through my pocket here, but also through my brain. When you look at what golfers get relief from, oh, there's a sprinkler head 3 yards away. Oh, come on, ref, I'm going to whinge and whinge and whinge until you give in and give me relief from that. There's a scoreboard in my way, but it's not in my way, but it could be in my way, so can I have some relief? You know, they just scam the system all the time, and the rule book is so flaky that it allows it to happen. But then when your ball rolls into a divot, which isn't your fault, unless you were the one who didn't repair the divot the time before, which is very unlikely, you really should be able to just lift the ball and take it out of the divot and place it. There is no justification for this rule. It is absolutely mad. And the divot that Henley went in, it was like a bucket. It was extraordinary. Now, there's no excuse for the feeble golf he performed thereafter. So, you know, you'd probably say Lucas Glover won fair and square, and well done to him, and well done if you back Lucas Glover. But goodness me, they've got to do something about that, haven't they, James?
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree that the divot rule for me is just, I just don't understand how nobody's looked at that over the years and thought, you know what, the player just moving it, just a little flick of the ball out of the divot, not doing anything else, there you go, and they've got a lie that they should have had for hitting the fairway. It seems very, very strange for them not to have made. And then you get somebody, you hear some people saying, oh, well, it's all right, it's sanded the divot. But if you don't land in a sanded divot, then you're knackered, really. And, you know, the fine margins that it is for a professional golfer to be able to put the spin and everything, the contact they want, landing a divot is horrific. And, yeah, just very unfortunate that rule has not been changed, really. But I do
agree. I'll tell you what, though, to have an argument with myself here, James, you know what would happen? They would be constantly looking for rulings and saying that's in a divot. And it might be a divot that's ancient, and there would be very blurred lines, and they would do it to be fair, they would do it to improve their lie, wouldn't they? So I guess maybe that's a counter argument. But in blatant cases like the one with Henley, I mean, that was just that's not remotely fair. That you know, there needs to be a common sense approach to what is a genuine divot, I would have thought.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if you give them an inch, they try and take a mile, don't they? And that's what they will do. They'll try and sort of make use of the rules as much as they can. But there are some rules which, you know, there's some players I've seen recently when they try to get too much relief. Not sure if you saw the Scottish Open, and it was Sam Burns, I think, in a bunker.
Oh, yeah, it was ridiculous. He smashed into the face, didn't he? That went on forever, didn't it? Oh, my goodness. Oh.
And then he eventually didn't get the relief because the first official was saying, yeah, I'd give you relief there. And then a Spanish official comes over and goes, no, you're not getting
that. I
love
the second official. Yeah. He was just, no, I've got to be fair to the field. The first official was feeble, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He goes, oh, go on. And he sort of let himself get whinged into giving it to him.
And he just thought, this is a Lynx golf course. You're going to get things like this. You've tried to get out of the bunker. You've made an error. And now you're basically trying to get a free shot from it. And I was glad that was never given as relief for him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. Are we anything else to add while we're in reflective mode, or do you want to look ahead?
Just in terms of Glover, well played to him for the victory. First win in over 2 years, and he played himself into the playoffs. 112th he started the week, and then 49th he's in the FedEx Cup standings now. So well played. And obviously, some of the hard luck stories are Justin Thomas.
I didn't see that about.
Oh, did Justin you not?
Because Sky didn't show Justin Thomas at all. No, I didn't see any Justin Thomas.
So he missed. He
you
missed
may hint
out
the sarcasm there, James. That was, I mean, it was like. Sunday night, let's focus on Justin Thomas, and we'll also give him some snippets of what else happened. Now, I know it was amazing on that final hole, but goodness me, I mean, like, do we really care that much about whether Justin Thomas makes 75? He's played like an absolute drain all year. You know, there's other players on the bubble. This obsession with Justin Thomas was ridiculous, albeit, as you're about to say, it was quite mad, the final hole, wasn't it?
I mean, one place he missed out, 71st, he finished in the FedEx Cup standings, and he kind of, I think, in his head knew he probably needed a birdie on the last, and then off the side of the green, has a couple bounces, hits the pin and bounces away from the hole, and he's fell over as a result. But he missed out. Adam Scott misses out. I think it was 16-year run in the playoffs. He's now ended. Shane Lowry, Billy Horschel, some big names missing out, and it's all for this new change that they've made with the top 70 now going into the FedEx Cup. And one last mention is for Ludvig Åberg as well. I know Steve's a big fan of Ludvig Åberg. Tied 14th finish, a real prospect. He hasn't made the FedEx Cup playoffs, but he only sort of joined in later on in the season. He's a real talent.
And it does make you wonder, actually, whether the likes of Åberg might be heading off to Sweden next week for the ISPS Handa, which, you know, because they might need to do it to force their way into the Ryder Cup. So we'll look at that next week. But in the meantime, we'll look ahead to three tournaments this week. And we'll start with the first of the 3 weeks that will lead us to the FedEx playoff champion. It's the FedEx St. Jude Championship. I'll give you some prices, and then James will tell us all about the course and the tournament, and then we'll get his selections. Right then, as you would expect, the stars are out. Here are some indicative prices. Scotty Scheffler, 13-2 favourite. Big Johnny Rahm, 8-1. 9-1 Rory McIlroy, 16 Cantlay and Schauffele and Hovland. 22 Morikawa, 25 Hatton, 28 Fowler and Spieth and Day and Finau and Fleetwood. 33 Bar. Where is this tournament taking place? How many runners are there? What kind of golfer should it suit, James?
Yeah, so this is TPC Southwind, par 70, 7,244 yards, 12 par 4s, 4 par 3s and 2 par 5s. You've got water that comes into play on 11 holes just about there. It's had a variety of winners. You've had Justin Johnson, Abraham Anser, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger, Harris English, Lee Westwood. But one thing I think that's key here, and I've looked at, is strong tee to green game. You know, if you're posting good stats and strokes gained in that department, I think you've got a good chance of contending. The par 3 11th is probably, you know, the course's signature hole. It's like a peninsula green that requires a short iron. It's quite similar to the 17th at TPC Sawgrass, but it's not water all the way around it. It's water down the right-hand side. Remember maybe last year with Will Zalatoris, he had a three-hole playoff against Sepp Straka, and Zalatoris, he hit his iron shot into that green on the third playoff hole, and it ended up hitting the rocks. It bounced up three times on the rocks.
Oh, yeah,
and then
of course
wedged,
it landed right on the edge,
wedged
didn't
in
it?
Between,
yeah.
And
I
then,
do remember that, yes.
And then Straka on the tee box after seeing that, then dunked his in the water.
He did,
I mean,
yeah, you're right. I remember now. Thankfully, you've said something I remember. That's
re-choking the memory. But yeah, I mean, that's Steep as Heath Althorn. So it's, you know, it's a difficult course. I think it's one that requires a bit of accuracy, like I said, tee to green. In terms of what it's hosted now, it's hosted the St. Jude Classic from 89 to 2018. It then was renamed the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. That was 2019 to 2021, before it then changed to the FedEx St. Jude Championship last year. So it's had name changes, but it's always been at TPC Southwind. It's a slight change as well. For those that don't know, the FedEx Cup is that they've revamped it this year. So as I mentioned earlier, it's not the top 125 that used to go into the first playoff event. It's now the top 70, and there's big points on offer. The points are quadrupled here for the FedEx FedEx Cup. It's 2,000 points for a win, 12 if you finish last. There's no cut in any of the last three tournaments as well. Top 50 go into the BMW Championship next week, top 30 for the Tour Championship. So,
and the Tour Championship's still a handicap, is it?
Tour Championship is still a handicap, and if any player for some reason that qualifies can't play, they're not replaced. It's just a smaller field. And also slight changes is you've got the FedEx Cup Fall, which is seven events now after the FedEx Cup is finished. It begins at the Fortinet Championship. It finishes with the RSM Classic, and that will then determine the top 125 players going into next season. That sort of playing, playing rights. Yeah, it's all a tweak that they've made to it, I think, just to try and make
it. You get the impression FedEx have gone to the PGA and said, right, we put all this money in and we don't feel we're quite getting what we need. We need more. And so they've given it the FedEx Fall. Blimey, exciting stuff.
Big changes.
Just remind us which state we're in, because I think it's quite important. If it's California, then it almost means a late finish. If it's Florida, it's more manageable. Which one are we in?
It's Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, that's not too bad. So it shouldn't be too late a finish unless we get some thunder like we did last week. Okay, then, James, without further ado, how many selections have you got?
Got three selections for this one.
Jolly good. Who do you like the most?
The top of the bill is Jason Day for me, around 33-1. You can get him. Think he looks like a good price, but he returned to the winner's circle more than 5 years away at the Byron Nelson in May. He then followed that up with a tied second in the most recent outing at the Open Championship. He did sort of fall away after the Byron Nelson, had three missed cuts in a row, but I expected that's just the pure relief of getting back to the winner's circle. But tied second at the Open, you know, only a sublime Brian Harman was too good at the Royal Liverpool Golf Club. But I watched a lot of that last round, and Jason Day, he had so many near misses with his putts. So he could have very much gone on to lift the claret jug if he just had a little bit more luck on the greens. But previous winners I mentioned there, TPC Southwind, all demonstrate strong tee to green game. Day ranks 19th in strokes gained in that category on the PGA Tour this season. His total driving as well, he's got a rank of 12th. That's accuracy and distance combined together. So, you know, another good factor, especially with water coming into play on a lot of the holes. He still boasts one of the best short games in the world. I've never got any worries about that. His up and down game, his bunker play is superb. He had a best finish here as well of 6th. That came back in 2020. So, you know, fairly recent form for him. Really solid claims this week. And yeah, he's not in any danger either of having to have a good tournament to make sure he gets into the BMW. He's in the top 20 of the FedEx Cup standings as we are. So I think he's got a really good chance. I think he's playing with a little less pressure on his shoulders, as if someone who was around sort of obviously outside of the 50 bubble trying to get into the BMW next week.
Excellent. You make a very good case for Jason Day there. Who's the main danger?
Main danger, Matt Fitzpatrick, again around the same price, 33-1. I'm veering a little bit away from stats for this one. This is more based on course form for me. In fact, Fitzpatrick hasn't really looked his usual self in his last three outings. He had a tied 41st, his best finish. That came last time out of the Open. Think he needed a little break, which he's taken. He's not been seen since then, so he's refreshed for the playoffs. You know, I think it could turn out to be a really good decision for him. He's had four cracks at this course, and he's finished 4th, 6th, 57th, and 5th. So two top fives and a top 10 in there, I think, is pretty good. His usual tidy, compact tee to green game, that's helped him challenge here in recent years. I think a return here could spark something in him. He also needs a little boost in the standings. I mentioned Day before, he's got less pressure, not having to worry about getting into the bubble. Fitzpatrick's 36th at the moment, so he could do with a strong showing just to keep him in that sort of top 50, but also edge him closer to the top 30 as well and getting close to the Tour Championship. That's the main goal for him, but I think Fitzpatrick with his course form could be a danger.
Interesting. You wouldn't say he's had the best year. He'd probably give himself about a 5 out of 10 for this year, would you think, after his breakthrough major victory the previous year?
I mean, because he won the RBC Heritage, so I'm gonna give him more of a seven and a half, eight, yeah, just because he got that PGA title.
I besmirched him there. All right, then we've got one more tip. Who's that?
Yeah, rounding them off is Sepp Straka. You can get him around 60 to 1. Now, the Austrian's really taken his game to the next level over the past 18 months, really. Got his maiden PGA Tour title. Then he got his second at the John Deere Classic. That came in July. And he followed that up straight off the back of that win with his best major finish. He was tied second at the Open. Obviously, doesn't mind playing week in, week out. He's right in the mix for a Ryder Cup place as well. He's seventh in the world points list. I think another good performance in Memphis. It'll make it hard for the European skipper Luke Donald to overlook him for that event at Marcus Money Golf Club for a player that's in form and just seems to be, you know, definitely more at ease, I think, now with the elite players in the game. I think a couple of years ago he had your worries, but he's really improved his game. He was second on debut here as well. Mentioned, obviously, lost in that playoff to Will Zalatoris last year, but he's a more accomplished player arriving this year as well. So I think he's really ready to challenge again. He's a big boy as well, Straka, who gives it a good whack off the tee. So I think he's got a good chance.
I like that. I must say, talking of Zalatoris, James, I do feel sorry for him because, I mean, he's got the lot, hasn't he? But just he's not fit, and I suppose there's issues over the putting. But what a great golfer. And he must be sitting there so frustrated while watching all these other people earning fortunes and winning big money.
Yeah, no, he is. He's a fantastic golfer, and there's so much promise about him. Was meant to play in the Tour Championship last year, pulled out. That was why it was a slightly reduced field in that top 30. He missed the President's Cup as well. It's just hard for him, really, to have to overcome. I think it was shoulder back surgery, something like that it was. And it's just, he wants to get back into the elite level, but he just needs to try and get that full recovery going. And also, there's obviously the question marks about his putting as well, the slicing motion that he has. But he is a top-quality player. He will be back. He will win things.
OK, well, one of the big three at the top of the market this week who does also have putting problems is Scottie Scheffler, of course. So Scheffler, McIlroy and Rahm, did any of them come close to being tipped, or are you pretty down on all three, would you say, James?
I just didn't go for that. They didn't sort of appeal to me. Obviously, you know, they're at the top of the betting for the seasons that they've had, but Scheffler's form at the course isn't fantastic. He's had a couple of missed cuts. His best finish is 14th, and you mentioned there the putting woes that he's having. I mean, woes is a little bit harsh, but Scheffler's season, it's kind of what Rahm had last season when Rahm was leading everything tee to green, but his putting wasn't good. And Scheffler's got that this season.
Oh, no, I think they are official woes. I think his putting is woeful. It's awful. I mean, there's been tournaments recently, James, where if he putted even adequately, he would have won by 6 shots. So he's got massive problems, I think. But, you know, we've seen in the past, haven't we, that players can go away, take a little break, pick an old ping, whatever, out of the garage and suddenly bounce back, can't they? So I suppose he's a danger if he has found something on the greens, isn't he?
Yeah, that's it. If it all clicks into gear with the putting, then you think he's going to be very dangerous. But then, obviously, professional golfers, it all clicks. But usually when you're an amateur golfer, your putting comes back, but then your long game goes away. But I think out of the three, John Rahm would be the one that maybe closest or more inclined to going for. He's had a seventh and a fifth here in his three outings at TPC Southwind. So for me, he's probably the one I would go for out of the three. But none of them made the selections.
Jolly good. Let's move across to Surrey, where the AIG Women's Open is taking place at beautiful Walton Heath. Of course, very close to me. I think I might even go along on Friday. It's meant to be a lovely day. So I'm going to pop along and watch some of James's selections. We'll find out who they are after I take you through the market. It's wide open this week. Hyuju Kim is 14 to 1. So's Nelly Korda. Celine Boutier, red hot Celine Boutier. 2 victories in the last 2 starts. She's 16s, along with Rose Zhang. Minji Lee is 18, Leona Maguire 20, Lynn Grant 20, Jin Yong Ko 20, and then it's 22 bar. So, James, Walton Heath, beautiful Heathland venue. It's so nice that, unlike the men's open, they play the women's one at some of our lovely inland courses rather than sticking rigidly to links. Tell us all about the venue, the field, and then we'll get your selections.
Yeah, the purists, the open purists may sort of be cringing a little bit, but I like the fact they've gone inland here. Walton Heath, it's a great club. I mean, it's hosted a few tournaments. You know, the Ryder Cup obviously was the biggest one in 1981. It had the European Open 5 times. The last of those was in 1991. had the Senior Open Championship in 2011, and most recently was the British Masters in 2018. Eddie Pepperell won that. It's also the venue for US Open European qualifier, and it's been there since 2005. And Michael Campbell actually qualified in 2005 at Walton Heath for the US Open, and he then went on to win it at Pinehurst. So
that's the greatest free sporting event you can go to, by the way. I've been to it. It's free. You just turn up, park up, and incredibly, okay, while the player, say you're following, I don't know, I remember following David Howell once, and as he's taking a shot, you can walk behind them on the fairways. It's extraordinary. You've just got people wandering along behind the players on the fairways. You've got people with their dogs and everything, and it's free. It's absolutely brilliant. So do check out next year that date and put it in your diary, because it's a brilliant, brilliant thing to do. It really, really is. Okay, then. So how many selections have we got, James?
Going for three selections for this. Just to let you know about the course as well. It's been playing. It's a composite layout of the old and the new course as well, because there's two courses. And it's the 12th and the 13th from the new course. They're brought in. The rest are on the old course. Par 72, 6,881 yards. It's got a lot of heather around it. That's its main defence. I mean, I saw someone actually, the Walton Heath head pro, Simon Race, he was asked about the course defences ahead of the tournament. And he said the greens are relatively large. The runoffs into the bunkers are quite pronounced. He says you can hit and hold the ball in every part, especially if you're coming from the wrong side. But he says being relatively high up, the wind plays a factor. Obviously, the heather comes into it as well. So he says finding the fairways off the tee and staying out of the heather will be paramount, because it gives you control into the fast greens.
I've played it a few times, and honestly, that heather, I mean, it looks gorgeous, particularly when it's in bloom, lovely, vibrant colours. But if you go in there, it's like being in sort of barbed wire, or no, even solid steel sort of sculptures of plants. It's just impossible. Honestly, you can break your wrist trying to get out of there. So you do very much need to keep it out of the heather. Right then, three tips. Lead on with your strongest fancy, James.
Going for Ayaka Fudawe, as it's pronounced. Last time I tipped Ayaka Fudawe up, but it's Fudawe, I found
yes,
out.
Yes, someone
how you
he
say
didn't
it.
Admonish us. He educated us in the comments section, didn't he? Yeah,
so I saw that in the comments and I thought that didn't sound right. Went on YouTube and listened to the commentary, and it is, yeah, Fudawe. So
so if you're trying to find it on a bookie's website, what's the phonic spelling of it?
It's Furue, so F-U-R-U-E.
Okay.
So that's what you're looking for on the bookmakers. But anyway, Fudawe is getting closer to breaking her major duck. You can get it around 33-1. She's had top tens at the PGA Championship and the US Open this year, adding to her fourth place finish at the Evian Championship in 2021. I mentioned, obviously, fairway finders, what I want this week, and the Japanese is sixth in driving accuracy. She's obviously been doing really well with the flat stick as well. She's 16th in putts per green in regulation, 20th in putting average. And, you know, the comments I made there before from the head pro of the course saying reading the greens, the little subtle slopes and the breaks will be really, really key. So it's good that Fudawe is doing well in that aspect. She's making just a third British Open appearance this week, but she has shown a liking for this type of test. She was tied 20th, in 2021. Hasn't properly clicked into gear in her last two outings, tied 36th, tied 47th, but she often saves her best for the biggest event. She's shown that this season, and she seems to thrive when the pressure's ramped up. So I think she's quite big odds, actually, when you look at the market for a player that's been quite consistent.
Excellent. Right then, that's the main selection. Who's the main danger?
Going for Ashley Buhai, then, the defending champion, the South African. Her best major results have come in the Open. That victory,
I might need spelling on that as well, sorry.
B-U-H-A-I.
Oh, okay.
I'm going for Buhai. Some might go for Buhai, but I'm going to go for Ashley Buhai. But the victory last year, fifth place finish in 2019, and a tied 11th in 2020, all come in the Open for her. So she enjoys this major. Now, a 34-year-old's got an affinity for finding fairways, like Fudawe does. Said it's often a key performance in her, or it's a key factor in her strong performances. She's 11th in driving accuracy. She's 12th in putting average as well. Obviously, there's quite a correlation. I'm looking for strong drivers and good putters here. She's had a victory in five top tens this year as well. Shows her games in fine fettle. Be no surprise to me to see her challenging for a second Open title. She's looking to become just the second female player to successfully defend the British Open since it was recognised as a major in 2001. It was... you've got me on that.
Sorry,
one now.
Mate. Don't
I wrote
worry.
It down before. It was Tai Wang's Ti Seng.
Excellent. And who's your other tip?
Yeah, the big tip, the third and final one at 150-1, good each way shout. Best major finish for Andrea Lee. That came at the 2020 Open. She was tied seventh, and she heads into this one in good form as well. Tied ninth at the Scottish Open. Think that should put her in, you know, the fact that she's done well. Obviously, Scottish Open was a links course, but Walton Heath has similarities to it. It's got sort of the tight fairways. It's got the bunkering as well. So I think it's good that Lee performed well at the Scottish Open. She's eighth in drive and accuracy. Her game just appears suited to this type of test. I think a really good each way proposition going into this one, and someone I think that could maybe outrun what is really big odds.
Jolly good, excellent. And finally, we've got Liv Bedminster, which sounds like a little village in Dorset or something, but is actually somewhere in America, I'm sure. James will tell us where. First of all, though, here are the markets. I'm interested to see that Bet365 are now offering a fifth the eight, and even bigger as well. So it's not just a quarter of the five anymore. So as we always say on the show, do shop around, not just for best prices, but best place terms. These are indicative prices. Bryson DeChambeau, not surprisingly, after his heroic performance on Sunday's favourite at 9-1. Cam Smith is 10s. Brooks Koepka 14, along with Mito Pereira and Dustin Johnson and Taylor Gooch. Patrick Reed 16, Joachim Niemann 20, Harold Varner the third is 20, so Sebastian Munoz, it's 22 bar. Where is Bedminster?
Bedminster is New Jersey. Okay. That's where we're going for this one.
There'll be a raucous crowd, I'd imagine, won't it? I think it's almost mandatory to say that whenever a golf tournament takes place in or around New York, that there will be a load of drunken, raucous spectators. But I think they almost rev that up now, don't they, Liv? They have DJs and try and turn it into a sort of party with a bit of golf going on the side. But from a golf perspective, what's the course like?
Yeah, of course, so the Trump National Golf Club, par 72, 7,580 yards. So it's quite a long test for them, but it's wide. It's tree-lined fairways, huge white sand bunkers. Water comes into play on around half of the holes as well. Looking back at last year's event, the rough wasn't too penal, really. It wasn't that thick. So going off course with the driver, it's not bad, actually. So if you're not the most accurate, don't matter about that one. It's all about solid approach play and making putts. Now, Henrik Stenson claimed the spoils last year. If you remember, that was his first tournament since he made the switch over to LIV Golf. So he won that on 11 under ahead of Matthew Wolff and Dustin Johnson. They were the closest challengers on 9 under par. So it'll be an interesting one. I don't think they would have changed too much in terms of the rough for this year. I think it'll be pretty much the same kind of conditions as it was last year. So I'm looking for a solid approach player and someone that has a good short game.
Righty ho, how many players fit that particular bill?
I've got two selections for this one.
Right, you are. Who is the number one tip?
Headline tip is Patrick Reed at 16-1. Now, he's yet to win on the LIV Tour since making the switch, but he's had a number of solid performances. One of those came at Trump National in 2022. He was fifth in this event last year. It was just a middle round of 73 that really cost him. That was, a few over par there, and everyone else just pulled away. He had too much to do on the final round, but I mentioned a good short game. Reed is always a dab hand around the greens. You know, he's great up and down. He's very solid with the putter. And I think being able to be slightly off cue with the driver actually works in his favour. You know, he won't get into as much trouble as he would in other courses that are tighter and have the rough that's higher and thicker. He's shown up well in the majors as well this year. Tied fourth in the Masters, tied 18th in the PGA. And then the US Open and the Open, tied 56, tied 33rd. At least he's made the cut in both of those. So he's still a very capable player, and I think one that could be in the mix this week. I think he's usually towards the top end of the betting in most of the LIV events as well, which shows where his standing is in the field as well.
Absolutely. Okay, and who's the other tip?
Sergio Garcia is the second and final tip at 20-1. Another one that's looking for a first LIV win, but another one that's been knocking on the door as well. He's had six top tens on LIV since he joined. And like Reed, one of those came in Bedminster last year. He was seventh, so he showed good form there. He was 12th last week at LIV Greenbrier as well, but it was the way he finished that tournament that makes me confident about his chances this week. He went round in 7 under on his last round as he shot up the leaderboard. That bodes well going straight into another event. I think if he was waiting a few weeks, that you would maybe think, oh, he'll sort of not rusty, but he won't be in that same sort of the flow that he was in after the final round of Green Bay, but he's straight into competitive action, and I think he can keep the momentum going. He's still one of the crispest strikers of the ball, especially with the irons. Approach play will be vital here. I mentioned the putters. Garcia's obviously putting over the years. It has been this probably the weakness of his game, but it's still, I think, in this field, it's still good enough to win. And I think if he can get his iron play going, get the approach play going, he's got a good chance at 20-1.
Okay. You mentioned earlier in the show, by the way, James, just about a bit of sort of residual beef between PGA Tour players and the LIV players. But, I mean, you know, they're supposed to have, you know, jumped into bed together. This announcement's pretty much 2 months old now, isn't it? And yet have you seen any evidence or that they've got a plan or a strategy or that they've got a clue how this is going to shake out next year?
Not in terms of whether LIV players are going to be allowed on. They have just recently released the schedule for 2024 on the PGA Tour. Because, of course, next year it goes to a calendar year. It's not the wraparound season anymore. So they've got these signature events. So they were designated events. I think they were elevated events, they were called.
They're now needed a new name. Oh, they've got their signature now.
Signature events for 2024. So you've got eight of them. You've got the Century, Pebble Beach, Genesis, Arnold Palmer, RBC Heritage, Wells Fargo, Memorial and Travelers, and then obviously the majors along with that as well. So they have announced that, but I've seen absolutely nothing in terms of what's going to happen to LIV. There's a few players on the PGA Tour have said they have to be punished. There has to be a punishment for them. But what that punishment is, I don't know. A fine isn't going to do much to them because they've got all their money.
Yeah,
when
here you go,
going
Dustin.
To LIV.
You've got $150 million. We're going to fine you $2 million. That's not going to work, is it? No.
Yeah, I just don't know what they're going to do in terms of punishing for them.
I'm not even sure they know. I really don't. Anyway,
start them in Q school.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I like that. I like that. No, actually, I don't know. I would just like to see, you know, the best players all playing against each other week in, week out like we had before. I think that would be good. Right then, but we'll get back to the golf this week and we will reiterate James's tips. And we'll start with the FedEx St. Jude Championship.
That's the one. Three selections, Jason Day, Matt Fitzpatrick and Sepp Straka.
The AIG Women's Open.
Three selections again for this, Ayaka Fudawe, Ashley Buhai and Andrea Lee.
And we've got LIV Bedminster.
Two selections here, Patrick Reed and Sergio Garcia.
Nice one. Who would you say your nap of the week is out of all that lot?
Jason Day. I just think he is prime for it, Jason Day. I really, really do. I went for him in the Open, obviously got the each way coming in tied second. I just think he's just ripe for the picking this week.
Fantastic. Great stuff. Thank you very much, James. Thank you to producer Will. Thanks so much for watching The Sweet Spot. We're back next week with the ISPS Hander and the second of the three FedEx playoff events. It's the BMW Invitational Open. In the meantime, check out Racing Post tomorrow for all the best previews, comments on all the leading contenders, all the stats, and Racing and Football Outlook as well for more great golf betting advice. We're back next Tuesday. Hope you can join us for that. Enjoy the golf. Have a great week.